From the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, this is the Locked On Chiefs podcast.
And welcome back to another bonus edition, actually, of Locked On Chiefs. I am Chris Clark, and with me today, I actually have Nate Taylor of The Athletic. Nate, how's it going?
Oh, it's fantastic here on this gray Thursday in Kansas City. How are you?
I'm doing great. Are you ready for this game on Sunday?
Yeah, sure. I mean, thank God Drew Lock's the quarterback, right? Because if it was Joe Flacco, I wouldn't give two you-know-whats about this game until kickoff.
I understand.
It's interesting, like, fans all the time would be like, how can this be a trap game? How can you have a letdown game? And, like, even me as, like, a reporter who's around the team, it's like, wow, that was so fun going to New England, having something different happen, you know, them actually beating the Patriots. And then you're like, oh, yeah, the Broncos, who are, you know, who they've just dominated for the last 4 years. Okay, I guess they'll have to play it on the schedule. So to explain to your listeners, like, yes, these are how letdown games happen. It's just like, whoa, we're so pumped. And now it's like, okay, Drew Lock, he kind of fun.
Well, yeah, and he's been playing well, and that's a big concern going into this game. Obviously, they look at what they've done the past 2 weeks, and Drew Lock has really changed what their offense looks like. And Denver has always been struggling on offense, at least for the past 4 or 5 years. So if he is able to play well, that's going to be a concern. But you start looking at what this game really means for Kansas City. They've dominated the AFC West. The only time they've lost to an AFC West team is on a Thursday night. Andy Reid is 27 of 30, I think, in his time in Kansas City. So I feel pretty good about the game. I do understand there's a possibility of a letdown game, letting it loose a little bit. But I want to talk to you today about a couple of different areas. Mike Padel was added late in the season, and he seems to have really found a place in this defense. And what can you tell me about him and the way he's come in and his leadership ability that he's brought to this offensive or defensive line? I apologize.
No. Yeah. No, I completely understand, Chris. And he is a character that, like, I never thought was going to be in this story that we were all sort of on this journey together as reporters, fans, the players themselves. So to give some background, Mike Padel, you know, started his career, well, undrafted, started his career in Green Bay for a couple of years, did get into an issue with, violating the league substance abuse policy. That sort of gave him an opportunity to sort of rebound in New York with the Jets. And he actually played pretty well, even though he was pretty much under the radar based on a lot of the young talent they had drafted earlier up there. And then he spent all the offseason with the Patriots as sort of a fill-in-the-gap kind of guy. Hey, maybe he can be of help, maybe he can't. Obviously, we know the Patriots have a great defense, so they didn't necessarily need him when it got to cut-down day. And so basically he hung out on the couch for, like, what, 7-8 weeks? Until finding the right opportunity. And I did not know about this, and this has been put on Twitter by my friend Harold Kuntz of Fox 4 here in Kansas City, where, you know, the whole idea is, like, we're interviewing him, and I'm like, hey, you know, like, how many teams reached out to you? And he's like, oh, you know, a good amount, like, to the point that I knew I should keep working out and should keep, you know, getting my body in shape for that potential call in October or November. And then he tells us that, like, oh, I've been a Chiefs fan all my life. And I'm like, oh, your life? But he is from Topeka by way of his grandparents, and he is a physically unmovable man. That's, like, the best way I could say it. He's got some quickness. He's obviously tough. He has solved their issues in terms of defending the run probably better than any single player on the defense, which, again, is wild to say. But the last time anybody ran wild on the Chiefs was Derrick Henry. And that was a game that, inexplicably, Mike Padel wasn't in the lineup. He was a healthy scratch, an inactive player, even though he had been showing well against Aaron Jones and Dalvin Cook the two previous weeks. He played really well against the Chargers, and that's when I think the defensive line really sort of gave fans a preview of what to come. And they sort of backed it up these last couple weeks. They got some pressure on Derek Carr. And then obviously they really made Tom Brady, who's not mobile by any means, but they got him off his spot of where he wanted to throw the football, and they sacked him 3 times. Mike Padel was obviously a reason why the Patriots realized pretty quickly, we can't run the ball as well as we thought we could because Mike Pennell's good. All of a sudden, Colin Saunders has been an emerging player. Derek Nnadi has gotten back to form from what we saw a year ago when he was a rookie. And all these things lead one to believe that, okay, like, the Chiefs, the defensive line is really their strength. Like, they have figured this out as the season's gone on. And who knew that Mike Pennell was going to be someone who was super important, but at the same time can really blend in. I just wrote this story about how the Chiefs loves basketball. He's delved right into that. He's found a really good chemistry and a really good rapport with Chris Jones in particular. And all of that has led to some success that, again, you just could not have accounted for when the year began, because it's weird to say that Mike Pennell is like one of the most important, not stars, but one of the most important players on defense.
It's really going to be interesting in the next couple of weeks, because at some point Xavier Williams is going to return to this lineup. I'm not exactly sure how that's going to happen or when it's going to happen. It could happen before the Denver game on Sunday. Yes. We just don't know yet. But really what has really stood out to me is Kansas City is now in a position where you could really trot out Tato Passanio, Mike Pennell, Derek Nnadi, and Chris Jones, or just three of those guys, and go into a nickel package and still be pretty tough against the run.
Yeah.
Chris Jones can play defensive end enough.
Yep.
He doesn't have to be great, but he can do it enough. I mean, it's something he did in the 3-4, but he can definitely do it in the 4-3. He has the ability to do that. So having that scheme versatility and having the ability to move those guys around, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying you want Frank Clark off the field, because obviously he is a beast of his own in his own right, and he has been very good against the run, especially the past couple of weeks. But Pennell really brings something else to this roster that I didn't expect them to have this year. And Saunders has come along as well. I've been very impressed with that. I did think in the preseason that one of the things he struggled with was play strength, and I think his time in the system has really allowed to help him in that regard. So I have to ask real quick, talking about Xavier Williams, how do you think he's going to fit into this? Because at this point, I really like what the defensive line has done. I don't really know that you want to move on from any of the guys that you have, but you're going to have to make some move to bring him back. I would think that maybe you're looking at dropping a corner, which obviously is probably not going to be this week with the two guys still not practicing.
Yeah, so to give some information about how the designated to return sort of mechanism works. So once you're put on IR, there is a chance that you can come back, and the Chiefs and any other NFL team get two spots back. Now, they've already used their first designated for return player with Chad Henne, with the idea that, hey, if Patrick Mahomes goes down at some point, you don't just want one backup quarterback. Andy Reid, over the course of his career as a coach, has sort of decided that, hey, I would like three quarterbacks if I trust all three in the system. So that leaves you one guy that you can bring back. The only guy that has also been on injured reserve for most of this year is Xavier Williams, a veteran defensive tackle who's from Grandview, Missouri, who is also a Chiefs fan. It's weird. Yeah, he and Mike talk all the time about like how they're like, how they're playing for like their favorite NFL team, which, you know, is wild. Well, but usually doesn't happen.
Real quick, though, I bet that also adds a little bit of extra passion, though, for both of those guys.
Yeah, yeah. It's clearly showed. Like, I don't think Mike Pennell has put this many games together. He stacked this many performances where it's like, wow, we can't, like, we just have to have him on the field for, you know, X amount of snaps per game. So Xavier Williams could come back. He has 9 practices to sort of show the team, hey, I'm good. Like, I am someone of quality that you should, like, have me return. The Chiefs could also say, like, hey, thanks for practicing those 9 practices, but, like, we're comfortable with where we are at the defensive line. Let's reevaluate things in the offseason. I don't think that's going to happen, because Andy Reid was really positive last Friday, which was the third practice that Xavier had participated in, where Andy said, like, I think it's a great rule. It gives us a chance to look at Xavier. He's moved around. He's done really well so far. His ankle seems to be pretty good, because that's what his injury was. He had a very high ankle sprain that the team didn't want to, like, you know, rush him back by any means. Another sort of part in all of this is that Emmanuel Ogba was having a career year, and he got hurt in Tennessee. And so that sort of opened the door not only for Mike Pennell to have significant amount of snaps, but the team also waived Joey Ivey, who I love, by the way, but, like, you know, he had not played particularly well. He was kind of average. And so without Emmanuel Ogba, without Joey Ivey, that does allow you to maybe bring back Xavier Williams. Now, because you have Frank Clark, Alex Okafor, and Tano Passanio as your primary defensive ends, you have some fluidity there. Obviously, you mentioned Chris earlier about Chris Jones moving to the defensive end if you need that on a couple of snaps, or if you just want to get him matched up with an offensive tackle. But now it allows
in my mind, Chris Jones, sorry, real quick.
Yeah.
It's more of using him in a big front. trying to be able to stay stout against the run, because I think he gives you something that maybe, you know, passing, you know, has been very good. Frank Clark has been very good. Alex Okafor has been pretty good. But that's one of the biggest things that Kansas City has struggled with is a run this year. So
to me, that's stretch plays, particularly when you go out wide.
Absolutely. Yep.
And so if you have those four guys that you know are locked in, now you could have a rotation, and this goes down to like inactives, but you could have a four-man rotation of, depending on the matchup, Derek Nnadi, Colin Saunders, Mike Pennell, and Xavier Williams. Steve Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator, has a history most known in terms of what he did with the New York Giants, where it's like, just give me all the defensive linemen possible. Let's get this crazy rotation. Let's let guys be fresh in the fourth quarter when you have to go after the quarterback. If you have eight guys that you can count on in the playoffs, that does bode pretty well in terms of maybe being able to defend the run pretty well and then getting after the quarterback in the second half when you have to sort of secure a lead or prevent, you know, present some pressure to maybe get some turnovers. The secondary, I think, is pretty much stout at this point, or pretty much set. It's a matter of, hey, do you want the ability of, say, someone like Jordan Lucas to be on special teams and a potential backup if somebody goes down? But other than that, I think fitting is good. Kendall Fuller, yeah, he's been average, but like, he's a veteran. You probably want him on the field because you know he's not going to necessarily miss assignments. And so I think all these things are going to have to be based on the matchups of who you might play in January and also, like, obviously who's healthy. But I think there is a case to be made that, hey, Steve Spagnuolo likes as many defensive linemen as he can get who are capable. And with having Xavier Williams, that's just another guy that you can add to the mix that can give you some fluidity, some flexibility, and the ability to stay fresh when you need a sack, a strip sack, fumble at the post.
Well, yeah, and then you start looking at the next line. You start looking at the linebacker unit, and that was a much maligned unit early in the season. It's starting to come along. You saw Damien Williams play one of his best games in his career, in Kansas City at least, against the Patriots. Reggie Ragland has been playing well. What have you really seen that's changed from the defensive or from the linebacker unit?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just keeping it simple. And Steve Spagnuolo figured this out around week five, week six, because I think the last game where they put a lot of the onus on the linebackers, like wholeheartedly, where it's just like, hey, in the run game, in the pass game, like making shifts, shifting with the formation. The last game that I feel like he put a lot of the onus and responsibility on the linebackers was against the Texans. Didn't go well. One, they couldn't tackle. Darren Lee was, like, you know, kind of all over the place. He led up a lot of catches to both tight ends and running backs. And then I think from that moment on, with the understanding that, like, I need guys healthy and I need to keep it simple, he sort of stripped some responsibility away and said, hey, like, instead of, you know, and obviously that sort of shifted full-heartedly in the Green Bay game, where it's like, hey, we tried to put Anthony Hitchens on Aaron Jones. We gave him an opportunity. Didn't look good on tape. Gave up some touchdowns. We're not doing that anymore. So against Denver, the first time with Joe Flacco as quarterback, and this was a game where you could really be simple, he brought Reggie Ragland back into the unit, and he's never left since, and he just said, go forward. I don't care what it is. Like, just it's better for my linebackers to move forward than backwards in the zone coverage or backwards in the man coverage or backwards into, like, hey, all of a sudden they, you know, the offense has switched formations, and, like, now you're on him. Like, that usually doesn't bode well for the Chiefs defense at this point in the year. It's weird to say that, because you would, like, your linebackers are supposed to be able to do that. They're supposed to be able to go sideline to sideline. But the Chiefs, you know, as much as they try to reinvent this defense, like, the linebacker position is where they've sort of failed the most, while also having guys who are smart enough to just do the simple things. So that's blitzing. That's getting up in front of the running back, jamming him at the line of scrimmage if you get an opportunity before he runs a route. And then obviously just coming up and making the tackles. And who can I trust if you're Steve Spagnuolo to make a tackle? Reggie Ragland, not the fastest guy, but when he hits you, you usually go down, or you usually slow. You're slowed to a point where the pursuit can come in. I agree. Damien Wilson has played better than I ever thought he would this season, just because, one, I did not know a single thing about him, and two, he was okay in training camp. He was fine. Yep. Yeah, like, all right, he's a professional football player, but he's played better than I think I sort of projected, or even maybe the team sort of projected, because I thought he was just a roster filler guy, and now he's, like, by and large, a starter. And then I spoke to Anthony Hitchens on Sunday after the game against the Patriots, and all of a sudden, now that you've made things less dependent on the linebackers, Anthony Hitchens told me, oh, Spags gives me the ability to adjust, to change the play call. And I think that's a critical point in the season where Anthony Hitchens knows the playbook in and out. So when Tom Brady tries to get into a hurry-up offense or tries to change formations or tell somebody, hey, do this, or just shouts a certain thing that he may have seen on film, Anthony Hitchens has retained enough information to say, oh, okay, if you're going to do this, we're going to do that. And we're going to be in a position where we're much better to defend it than before, say, against the Houston Texans, where we couldn't figure out the RPO action because a lot of it was on the defensive ends and the linebackers outside, and we sucked. This time against the Patriots, it's like, oh, you want to do stretch runs? Okay, well, I can shift everybody over. I can tell, you know, Damian Wilson what to do if need be. And, oh, they're trying. Okay, you got a few yards on this play. Now you're going to try to, like, get some – you're trying to manufacture yardage by going in a quick hurry-up offense. Okay, that's fine. Me and Tyrann Mathieu are on the same page. I can tell my linebackers what to do. He can tell his – you know, his safety and his counterpart safety and the nickel, whoever it is, the nickel cornerback, what they need to do. And once the play starts, okay, we're all on, you know, it's really game one. We're not at a clear disadvantage. So by making it simple, by blitzing more, by being aggressive, by trusting your defensive line, who's, you know, obviously the strength of the defense, I think it's taken less of a burden off the linebackers and allowed them to just see the ball, go get the ball. And hey, if you have a chance to make a tackle, just make the tackle, because eventually, you know, Chris Jones or, you know, Frank Clark's going to get some pressure on the quarterback. And, you know, as the field sort of condenses, unlike last year, Tyrann Mathieu, Rashad Breeland, you know, Juan Thornhill, all those guys can play coverage in tight, condensed areas such as the red zone. So you're not at a disadvantage there either if you give up yards down the drive. All these things work hand in hand, but I do think the linebackers have changed to a point where it's just, you know, Anthony Hitchens, Reggie Ragland, Damian Wilson, and a sprinkle of Ben Neiman in zone coverage. If you are, say, in third and 13, if you're in third and longs, Ben Neiman can cover somebody and can still get their, you know, his hands on the running back if that's the dump off option for the quarterback.
Yeah, and then you've also seen a sprinkle in of Daniel Sorensen as well, kind of at a linebacker light type position. And I think that's been interesting. And I did not expect that in Spagnuolo's system, because Sutton used he used Sorensen in that regard as well, but it looks like Spagnuolo's taken that and is using it well. And then, you know, we haven't really talked about Frank Clark. We haven't talked about Tyrann Mathieu, who have both been playing very good in these past couple of weeks. But I want to flip over to the offensive side of the ball for a moment, because you look at what Kansas City is doing, and I know early in the year, all the talk was how all this offense was going to be amazing. And early in the year, it was very good. Mahomes was still very good. Mahomes was still able to get the ball down the field, even though he was dealing with an ankle injury. But that's kind of changed a little bit. Some of that may be on him, but a lot of it, I think, is also on the offensive line. He hasn't had the best protection over the past couple of weeks. And with all the injuries that have mounted up against or that he's been dealing with this year, it really seems to have changed the offense. But I guess two of my questions are, one, offensive line, do you see them making any changes regardless of whether or not everybody's healthy? And then two, what really has happened over the past couple of weeks to a month, maybe even 6 weeks, to Sammy Watkins and DeMarcus Robinson, who've mostly disappeared?
Yeah, these are great questions, and I do appreciate how thoughtful you were with them, Chris, because I think they're complicated, and they're also like a situation where the team is, I think, still trying to figure out for themselves, and that involves Andy Reid and specifically Andy Heck at the offensive line. And, you know, we do get to talk to the assistants every now and then. We talked to them last week before the Patriots game, and I sort of wrote about it like, hey, if this team is going to be as good as they were last year on offense, it mostly comes down to the offensive line. Like, the quarterback, still very good, if not great. You have enough wide receivers and enough options at the skill position players to move the football down the field. And yeah, if Damian Williams comes back and you have Spencer Ware, I think that's enough to move the chains in terms of running the football and just keeping defenses honest. Here's my theory. The team brought Stefan Wisniewski on middle of the year, and they've played him sparingly only when someone has had to go out. But it did dawn on me that when Andrew Wiley had his injury, during the Patriots game, Stefan Wisniewski came in and the offense played mildly better. I just wonder, will Andy Reid and Andy Heck go to the veteran who has been in the league longer, who's won a Super Bowl with the Eagles? You're trying to preserve his body because he is older, but I wonder, will he be counted on in the playoffs as a starter if Andrew Wiley continues to have injury issues, you know, nagging injuries, and also has this sort of inconsistency in production. There's really nothing the team – oh, go ahead.
Well, it's not – I was just going to say, it's not just Wiley. I mean, LVT has struggled solution for this year as well.
Like, I don't think there's anybody out there. You know, you could put Cam Irving out there. I think Andy is more like you just focus on the swing tackle positions in case something goes on with Eric Fisher's groin or something happens with Mitchell Schwartz.
Right. Yeah, and I'm not saying that Cam Irving should be in there, but I'm just thinking that, honestly, I think LDT has almost played worse than Wiley, at least at times.
There's evidence to suggest that. there's evidence to suggest that. And for your listeners, like, LeBron has been critical of himself. Like, this isn't like he's in denial. Like, LDT knows, like, I'm making more money than the average left tackle or right tackle, and you know, I'm not playing as well as he would like. So I don't know if that's injury related that hasn't been sort of explained or revealed, or if it's just if his talent is starting to wane just a little bit to where he can't be as active or as mobile as, you know, he needs to be in terms of, you know, protecting stunts, getting upfield in screen games, you know, being more of an athlete that is required in Andy Reid's playbook, honestly, from the interior. So it's these guys don't play smash mouth, just move the man in front of you forward. Like, there's so much technique and intricacies that go along. But I just wonder if Stefon Wisniewski will be used as a starter in January. It's just a thought I want to put out there.
And I guess I just was going to say, in terms of Wisniewski, I like the thought of him being able to be a starter in January in the playoffs. But my concern is that if you don't get him more extended time with the offense, it's not going to be near where it could be. So that's where I would try to make the change in the next couple of weeks and at least get him enough playing time and get him some time with the starters and around him.
I think Austin Ryder has gotten better in one regard, and that is with pass pro protections and understanding what Pat sees and what he sees on the field. Because although the Patriots did get pressure, it was mostly because it was manufactured by just a man beating a man. It wasn't scheme, which is always a concern when you play the Patriots. And I think Patrick Mahomes has understood what Austin needs and what he needs. And even though Patrick Mahomes has had happy feet at times, as my buddy Seth Kaiser has, you know, illustrated for all of us on Twitter, they are better in terms of, okay, they're not getting completely surprised like a guy just flying in into the backfield with like the offensive line looking like fools, you know. So
right, they're picking up stunts and twists better. Yeah, they're absolutely doing that, and I'll give you that.
So the offensive line. So for Austin Ryder, like, I can be the most confident in Austin Ryder out of the three interior guys, just because I know he's starting to see the game like a veteran should, along with Patrick Mahomes and what he sees and how they make adjustments at the line of scrimmage. For the wide receivers, it's been a confounding. It's been really confounding. One of the people I would love to talk to, and he has been, you know, not evasive, but like not always at his locker, is Sammy Watkins. And I have two thoughts. Man, he was good the first week. He was so good. Like, he was just like, I thought, like, they're going to score 50 points a game if he's this good. And whenever they get Tyreek Hill back, because it was pretty clear that, like, his season wasn't done when we left Jacksonville. So it's like, oh my goodness. And then, you know, next week, you know, DeMarcus Robinson is like, hey, I'm in a contract year. I need all the touchdowns. And it's just like, oh, like, this is going to be great. And, like, they don't even, like, Travis Kelce could just kind of be in, like, one-on-one coverage if all these guys are, like, flying down the field. And for whatever reason, I think Mecole Hardman has sort of supplanted or started to supplant DeMarcus Robinson. Now, Andy is doing right by DeMarcus, the veteran guy who knows the playbook, who knows all the plays, and is in a contract year. Hey, I'm going to give you your snaps. But when we get in third and long or second and 25, I'm going to put the kid out there and just see, like, how fast he can run.
Well, but the problem with that is, and I get that you have to give your guys chances, but DeMarcus hasn't been doing anything to really, you know, warrant continuing to get those chances. And Hardman has been, you know, he was on, what, 14 snaps and scored a 50-yard touchdown on one snap.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know how many times he was targeted on Sunday against the Patriots, but he's been very productive.
He has. I people may not enjoy it, and I know you may be in that group, Chris, but, like, I just think Andy understands I want to do right by DeMarcus. And the other point is he knows the playbook. And it is still clear, like, Andy will never say this publicly, and I don't even think McColl would say it publicly, but like, you know, there's still things that McColl in as a rookie has to really learn. And so I think what the offensive coaching staff has done is said, hey, here's the game plan this week. Here are all your plays. Just really focus in on these. Like, don't worry about the whole breadth of the offense, because that's for guys like, you know, Tyreek, Sammy, and DeMarcus, who have all been here for multiple years. So I think there's certain packages, certain plays that they have for McColl. They may increase his plays as we get closer to January and into January, but I think those are the two reasons that I can give with some certainty, is that DeMarcus knows the entire playbook, and when given the ball, it's not like terrible. Like, he hasn't fumbled, he hasn't dropped the ball. It's just he doesn't do as much as he did in September, which is like he would catch the ball, make a guy miss, or catch the ball over somebody in the end zone.
Well, and it to me, it's not even that he's struggled with, you know, not catching. I mean, he's caught most of the things, yes, that have been thrown to him, but he doesn't seem to get the ball thrown to him very often, which to me, if you're not getting the ball thrown to you, it means generally when it comes to Mahomes, and I understand Andy Reid's offense is, you know, has a lot of different keys, has a lot of different people that they're going to on first looks and whatnot, and Travis Kelce and the tight ends are going to be a first look for Mahomes a lot of the time, and then you have Tyreek Hill. But you would still think that, you know, Robinson and even more so Watkins would be guys that they're going to draw plays up for and try to get them open and try to use their skill set. But that just hasn't happened. And when you get to a point where it's pretty much, at least from what I've seen, and I know it's not every single play, but when you pretty much have Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce as your two major weapons, if Hardman's not on the field,
yep,
teams can scheme and beat that. And that's where you start to struggle, and not having Watkins is really hurt at times. And it's not like he hasn't been playing because he's been hurt. He's been out there, but he just hasn't been effective.
Yeah. So, and this goes to your point, Chris, the idea that Bill Belichick is basically, he told Patrick Mahomes on the first snap of the game, yep, it's the same game plan as last year, Doc. Like, I'm not changing. Like, hey, there's Sammy Watkins on Stephon Gilmore, I dare you to throw them in the ball 10 times tonight. And Patrick Mahomes is like, well, we've been game planning for exactly this. And so in some ways, Sammy has been effective enough that you still have to honor him. The issue with Sammy, and I agree with this with DeMarcus, is he's not getting as open as consistently as he was previously. Now, I don't know if that's because the hamstring with Sammy Watkins isn't 100%, you know, where it needs to be or where it was in September before he sort of re-aggravated it against the Colts, I believe, in October. And then secondly, for
sit- but yeah. If that's the case, I was just going to say, if that's the case, you need to sit him. Get him healthy for the playoffs. You don't need him in these last three games.
This is sort of the issue that I think Andy Reid is sort of dealing with, where he wants, not decoys, I mean, I'm not saying that, but like, if Sammy wants to play, he can play. Andy's just always like, just go play. and when you know you're playing a team as talented as the Patriots on defense, you kind of need him to play, even if he's not at 100%. Now, here's the thing. They have, and I know this for a fact, they have, and I want to ask Sammy this, they have clearly schemed things up for Sammy Watkins these last couple weeks, because as a coach, you want to stand that, like, man, my guy hasn't scored a touchdown in week one. I want to get him involved. I want to get him feeling good. I want to get him, you know, some shine in the end zone. The issue with that is you need everything to kind of go right. And the problem for Sammy Watkins is he is not so talented, or he's not as what he was in week one, where he could just supersede everybody because he was just like in great shape, knew the offense, and was like, I'm just going to let it fly this year. Since then, the offensive line has killed him on certain plays that I know they've designed for him. And then against the Oakland Raiders, it was so clear that Andy Reid was like, when we get to this spot at this area of the field early in the game, I'm going to dial your number up. We're going to get you this touchdown, because I've studied the Raiders. I know what they're going to do. You're going to be wide open. All you have to do is just hit this corner route, and you know Patrick's going to put it right on you. The issue with that is they schemed it up. The offensive line actually protected this time, and then the Oakland Raiders, I can't remember his name, just hailed Sammy Watkins in the corner of the end zone. And so the fans may forget that. Like, no, actually, that's a touchdown if homeboy doesn't grab Sammy Watkins. And even he knows that, oh, shoot, they got it. Like, please, Sammy, come here. Let me bear hug you. But that isn't a touchdown in his stat line. And so one of the things for a wide receiver that can be so, like, disparaging and, like, you know, it can be alluring and tantalizing at the same point is like, oh, my God, like, my coach is calling my number. I'm going to line up. We in the perfect match. Yes, I see the exact covers that coach has been telling me I'm going to get all week. I run a route, and then the guy, like, gives me pass interference and the ball's on time and like I can't get there because I'm being held. And then what makes it worse is that, you know, you put in all that work and then the referees are like, you know, the call still stands and second down. And you're like, wait, what? So I want to talk to Sammy about this. It's a good point to mention, but I know they've tried to scheme plays for him. They tried to do it last week against Patriots early. For whatever reason, him and Patrick were not in sync. I don't know if that's just because the atmosphere and the way the Patriots were playing the first two series kind of got them off their spots. But he's still productive enough that where he can be successful. I wonder now if Andy Reid will try to dial up Sammy Watkins' number the same way he's done the last couple of weeks for Travis Kelce in the red zone. Like, okay, we're in the red zone. Here's your one-on-one matchups. Make it work. And these are just ideas, but it's also partly to explain, like, he's still been, you know, effective when given the chance, but also his numbers could be better just because of all these other issues, offensive line, quarterback not being accurate, or just having, you know, like, people forget, Sammy Watkins played really well when Matt Moore was on the field. I don't know why, but, like, Sammy Watkins was great when Matt Moore was on the field. And since Patrick's come back, it's been odd and confusing as to why that production hasn't stayed where it was.
Well, and I think really what really surprised me, at least in the past couple of weeks, is that you have a situation where, in all reality, Sammy Watkins is in a contract year. I mean, yeah, I know he's not, but be fair about it. He's not going to be here on that number next year. He's just not. And, you know, so when he started the season so hot in the first week, you're sitting there thinking, oh my God, I don't know that Kansas City could afford him because there's no way that he's going to keep the 14. I mean, you know, they could try to pay him the $14 million, but I don't know how that's going to work out. At this point, I just don't know what's going to happen with Watkins. I hope that he is able to figure it out and he's going to be a much bigger contributor in the offense, especially in the postseason, because obviously Kansas City's headed back to the postseason and it's possible they get a number two seed. We have to be Bills fans and, you know, Bengals fans and Dolphins fans for the next couple weeks. And hopefully Kansas City can take care of their own. Nate, thank you so much for talking today. I really appreciate it. And you can tell everybody where they can find you on Twitter and all your stories as well.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It's a fun, lively discussion. And I hope fans see both of our sides. Cause it's so fun to talk about it once you get to like December and January, cause there's all so much information to process. But you can find me on Twitter at @ByNateTaylor. You know, hopefully I keep it pretty, you know, pretty tight on Twitter. Like I'm not trying to destroy your entire day, but hey, I'll give you some Chiefs news here and there. And then go to The Athletic. It's a great resource, a great site that has given me the opportunity to cover both the important things and the silly things that involve the Kansas City Chiefs. I try to do both pretty well. Like, hey, this is silly. Like, someone should give it the stupid sincerity and seriousness that it requires. And then also when things really do happen, like, try to provide the clarity, the information, and the context to, like, why things are the certain ways they are. So go to The Athletic. My buddy Seth Kaiser's with me doing film breakdowns. We just acquired Josh Briscoe from A10 to be our sort of columnist and our podcast host. And again, Chris, like, we all get to hang out with one another in training camp, and it'll be fun to see how everybody feels in January come the most important time of the year.
That's it for us today. Thank you all for listening. Enjoy the game on Sunday, and we will be back on Monday.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes or Google Play. Follow the show on Twitter @LockedOnChiefs. Check out my work at RGR Football on YouTube, Chris's work on LockedOnChiefs.com, and all of Seth's film analysis at TheAthletic.com. Thanks for listening.